Welcome to NHL Fantasy on Ice. Mock Draft 1.0 is around the corner. Who is the first overall pick? What goalies should you steer clear of? Plus, sleepers, stacks, and difference makers. Get ready for your fantasy drafts with Pete, Rob, and Davey.
What's going on, everybody? Jensen Reese and Davey Satriano in the house talking Mock Draft 1.0 on this Tuesday morning, August 6th. What's going on, guys?
What's up, Goalie Master?
It's great to be back here. You had Uncle Dan, Cam Robinson, Mike Kelly. I feel like it's the Beatles. They're back together, guys. I'm loving it.
Well, we got this mock draft here, so we all took part of it, the three of us. We each drafted a couple of teams to fill things out. It's the first of many mock drafts this offseason, but starting right at the top, it's a very interesting debate for number one. I think there are three guys in the running. There's Kucherov, Ovechkin, and Connor McDavid.
We had Kucherov selected first. Now, I think that kind of depends on your draft strategy, where you're going. What is the rationale behind Kuch at number one?
He had 128 points last year. He might not get that this year. He'll be at least 100. He pretty much does everything. McDavid, we're kind of in trouble because of the coach. We don't know what's going to happen there. Is he going to not play as much or in different situations? So I would take Kucherov there. But also, I think Patrick Kane is a guy I would put in ahead of Ovechkin there, personally, as a potential number one.
And when you think about Patrick Kane, who went number four in this mock draft, if you start to envision him maybe playing away from Jonathan Toews, who they both had career years on the same line last year, if you're looking at a Kane, DeBrincat, and Dylan Strome line, there may even be a higher ceiling for Patty Kane.
That's interesting. I don't think I would take Kane at number one. It's not that I don't like the player, but when you have an opportunity to take Connor McDavid, I don't care what position he plays, you got to take him. He is the bar none staple in fantasy hockey year in and year out, and I would be all over him if I had the number one pick.
See, I would still take Ovechkin over Connor McDavid. I know Ovechkin's so much older, but he covers the categories. You look at McDavid's plus-minus total in a down year for his team last year, not pretty. His hits total, not pretty. You can bank on all six standard categories for Ovechkin every single season, especially being in the top five in goals.
I'm just worried. He obviously gets the hits and stuff. I'm a little worried about the plus-minus because of all the power play time. And can he top 80? Can he get to 90 points? You know, it's, if you have a Kucherov, 120, that could be a 30-point difference in points, which is a lot there.
That is true. And I think for category coverage, you can pick up guys that hit in later rounds. You can target maybe those PIMs or whatever kind of plus-minus categories to offset anything that you are worried about with the guy you may reach on.
And let's be clear, this is a non-keeper standard league draft. If it's a points-only draft, there's no debate. I think it's McDavid. His floor is the highest of anybody. He's the only player, I think, since Ovechkin to have three straight 100-point seasons. And even if he gets moved off Drysdale's line, even if Tippett lowers his ceiling a little bit, he's still banking on 100 points.
Well, let's just think about it. I don't even know if we've seen his ceiling. Like, McDavid, to me, is a player when you envision what he can do year in and year out. I don't even think you picture what his ceiling is. It's almost like it's limitless.
So what does this mean for Leon Draisaitl, who was drafted at the very end of the first round, pick 12? I think that's a little low for a guy that also had 100 points and had 50 goals.
I mean, I actually think that's a little high for him. I would put him somewhere in the second round. He did have 100-something points, but I kind of viewed that as more of the best that he can do, because I'm not sure how well, you know, he can probably get 90 points. 50 goals, I feel, might be another reach, but I just think there were guys that were drafted ahead of him there, you know, the Crosby, McKinnon, that should have been. So I'm not sure we could bump him up really from 12.
And my concern with Draisaitl is the fact that if Dave Tippett separates him from McDavid, I mean, let's be honest, if him and McDavid are on the same line, Edmonton is a one-trick pony, and that is not going to win you hockey games in the Western Conference. So I think logistically, my number one concern with Draisaitl this year is if he loses that exposure at even strength to Connor McDavid.
They need to focus on, and I think Tippett knows it, it doesn't matter if, like, it's better for the Oilers if those guys are in the 80s and 90s and they make the playoffs than if they're in the 115 or whatever McDavid was and 105 of Draisaitl. I think that the team emphasis, that mindset is going to be different here under Dave Tippett, who has worked with very little talent, let's be honest, in his Coyotes days and hasn't had an NHL job in a number of years. So I think it's almost guaranteed that they're going to split those two up in the first season under Tippett.
Some other notable selections in round one, we had the first defenseman off the board, Brent Burns from the San Jose Sharks, went 6th overall. How do we feel about that pick, gentlemen?
I mean, I'll take the credit or the blame for that one. He's in the later stages of his career. To me, though, I also took Erik Karlsson, 13, first pick in the second round. I value those two very highly. I just think that they're the only two defensemen in the league that could do 82 in 82 or maybe even more, and they've shown the ability to coexist, so I'm really excited about both of them.
Yeah, the only issue I have with Karlsson is not only the health, but those two guys are pretty much going to be, and Vlasic, the workhorses on that defense. They lost some guys, so they might not have the same partners. It might be DeBoer may change some things up, but if those are your first two defensemen, you're pretty solid there, and you can worry about other positions, you know, as soon as the third round.
It's never mattered who either of those guys play with, though. I mean, those guys are standalone options, and I do. I'm on the Karlsson train. I'm always on the EK65 train. So, yes, I do check the injury reports every single day of the regular season, and that's just part of the reason why I'm getting some gray hairs, fellas.
So how do you guys feel about drafting a guy in the first round or early second that have injury concerns? I know you just mentioned Erik Karlsson. There's also the first goalie taken in this mock, Ben Bishop from the Dallas Stars at number 10. This is a guy who has been absolutely mired, maybe more than any other player in the entire league, by injuries over the past few years.
I took him there. It was a little high for a goalie. We don't really see goalies in the early or even most not in the first round, but he's the number one goalie in the league when healthy. It's a big if. I thought he should have won the Vezina Trophy last season. He had the best season. The Stars got better this offseason. There's no reason to think he won't put up good numbers again. The health is a concern with him, but I think he's the best goalie, and I want him in. Even if he's in for 75% of the season, I will take that.
That's true. That's what I experienced last year when I had him. Even though he did miss time, when he was in net week after week, I was cleaning up categories, Davey.
Hey, boys, the one question I have, and this is probably for Davey Satriano, the goalie master, always happy to have him on the program. Thank you, Davey boy, for jumping on. I'm looking at the first two goaltenders taken in the first round in Bishop and Vasilevsky. Question for you guys, is there another goaltender that you would consider in the first round, or is it really those two horses?
I think it's those two guys. The only other guy who could even be considered is Sergei Bobrovsky on Florida. The thing is, I feel like there's not many goalies anymore that will even start 60, 65 games. The league's been moving towards guys that have tandem. So even a guy like Rask, you wouldn't take him in the first round because he could be amazing, but he may only play 45 games. So Bobrovsky's the only other guy I would consider, but I think the first round is a stretch for him.
And I took him at 14. I took Bob at 14. That's real early in the second round. And that's kind of a strategy I was trying to debut. I want to test the strategy out this year in one of my real leagues, where I took Vasilevsky at number 11 in the first round. And on the same team, I grab Bobrovsky for my second goalie, second pick in the second round. And I want to see, Pete, if I have two 40-win goalies on my team, I mean, forward's such a deep position, I can grab those guys later, right?
That's a cool strat. I mean, you got the two Florida goalies. We both, and probably Davey too, we expect both of those teams to make the playoffs if Florida can put it together under Joel Quenneville. And yeah, the workload is huge. I mean, even look at the fourth or fifth guys. I mean, like Tuukka Rask, you don't know if he's going to split. He and Yaroslav Halak last year both played 40-plus games. That's no good.
And as we said about the forwards, you can get a good center in the last rounds. There's so many centers. So you're right, taking two number one goalies who can get, you said, 35, 40 wins off the bat, not a bad strategy.
And another strategy you can implore too, you can get some Boston guys, like we had Brad Marchand, plays a very valuable position in fantasy at left wing. His teammate David Pastrnak was taken in the second round. If you have two picks mid first, mid second, and you kind of worry, oh shoot, I missed out on the top five guys, don't worry, you can grab Marchand in the middle of the first round and then Pastrnak in the middle of the second round and have a great Bruins stack.
This is very what happened in this mock draft, I feel like, is very different than previous seasons where there's so much going on that if you take a player, you can stack their line mate in the second round. It happened three times in the second round. The Bruins, Marchand, Pasternak. There was the Avalanche with MacKinnon and Rantanen. And then you drafted two Maple Leaf centers, mm-hmm. Tavares and Matthews.
Yeah, and I know we were just talking about how deep the center position is, but if you get a guy like Matthews and you get a guy like Tavares, every night the Leafs play, you're getting, I guarantee you, 1 point minimum. That is absolute minimum every single time they play.
And stacking is great and everything, but I'll learn my lesson from last year where I had those three Penguins. They all produced at better than a point per game between Kessel, who's now with the Coyotes, Malkin, and Crosby. But I didn't win that league, so I think there's something to be said about the risks involved of having one team loaded up too much, and then you kind of ride with the ups and downs with that team, and in week-to-week matchups, it could burn you.
The thing about stacking is it's good. It can work well in a head-to-head daily league, but that league you were referring to was a weekly league. You had to set your lineup on Monday. Right, right. So if someone's hurt or if Pittsburgh's only playing two games, that's the issue there. But three can be done, but I would tend to avoid it because, like you said, that's a lot relying on one team. If you're shut out twice in a week, you get nothing.
And other notable selections in the second round, we had two high-end left wings go. We had Artemi Panarin with his new team, the Rangers, go at 19, and then Johnny Gaudreau, 100-point player with the Calgary Flames, go at 23. Are you guys leaning either way towards who you should select out of those two?
It's a toss-up. I mean, Gaudreau is the safer pick without a doubt. I mean, coming off a 100-point season, even if the Flames regress, you're talking about safety net, I think, with Johnny Gaudreau. I took Panarin based on the upside. I like the prospect of him playing with Zibanejad and Kapokako, but you know, the Rangers are still not a bona fide playoff team, and that worries me a little bit about my own pick.
I think 23 was way too low for Gaudreau. I would have had him above Panarin. I mean, what more does the guy have to prove? He does this every year. He almost had 100 points, or maybe he did, I'm not sure, 90 something. But Gaudreau's a guy that I think if you get him in the late second round, that's perfect.
I agree with you, Davey. I think Gaudreau could go pretty early in round two, maybe even end of round one. One pick jumping out on the paper to me, too, is Mikko Rantanen at 20. For a player that had the season he had last year, for the exposure to Nathan MacKinnon, for that Colorado Avalanche power play, which, Pete, we have ranked very highly on our power play rankings on NHL.com/fantasy, do you think that's too low for a player of his caliber?
It is too low. He should go right after Mitchell Marner, in my opinion. They're both still current RFAs. You expect them both to be on the team once the season starts. Maybe some antics or some question marks going into training camp. But Mikko Rantanen proved to all of us last year that this guy is a top 10, 15 player on the line with MacKinnon for the next 5 years, I think.
I feel like they both may slip a little because we saw what happened with Nylander last year. If one of these guys decides, hey, I need my money, they could miss some time. So they could actually slip. And if so, that would be a great take because it's worth storing that guy on your bench.
One guy that stood out to me here in the second round, I think it might be a little high, but I'll leave it to the experts, is Bergeron. Aging, injury concerns, is he taken a bit too high in the second round, or is that just me?
The crazy thing about Bergeron is he had career highs in offensive categories, and he only played like, what was it, 68 or 70 games. To me, these Bruins guys, if they're healthy for a full season, all three of them, it's a big question mark. Probably won't happen, but if it does, they're all hitting 100 plus.
Bergeron is aging like a fine Chianti Classico red wine producer, Bobby. Just FYI. I know in fantasy this guy gets a hard rap because people do reach for him, but he delivers year in and year out.
Fair enough. I'm a little down on the Boston Bruins. As you guys could see, I'm wearing the photographer bib today. Lost a bet to my good friend Brian Tarracone, schedule maker. He took the Blues. I took the Bruins. You could tell I'm a little salty on the Bruins and Bergeron and Marchand and those fellas. But listen, leave it to the experts. You think Bergeron deserves to be in that second round? I'll lay out.
That was that's ancient history to me, that Bruins thing. I know we were both on the same side, the wrong side of that equation. But again, congrats to the Blues. And we're moving forward now to the 2019-20 season.
I'm looking forward to hearing Bobby Third Mike singing Gloria before the season starts. But maybe that'll happen later by the end of the show.
I have some good pipes, Davey, so get me in front of the mic, do a little Gloria, get some people dancing.
I'm ready. Speaking of Gloria, we had Vladdy Tarasenko go at number 26 early in the third round. We also had Sasha Barkov lead off round three. And speaking of Barkov, I think that's a player I probably would rather have this season over Bergeron. So target Barkov second round. If he falls in your lap in the third round, I mean, you better be selecting that player.
And we were talking the other day about the Florida Panthers. How about this? They have two players in our top 250 rankings, which are different from this mock draft results, also on NHL.com/fantasy. But when was the last time that we had two Florida Panthers in the top 20 between Barkov and Sergei Bobrovsky? We've all been watching hockey for decades, and I don't think any of us have any idea when that time was.
Yeah, you know, last year I wouldn't say I was down on Barkov, but I wasn't going to take him in, you know, daily formats, whatever, at the end of the year. But with what he did last year and the how much the team has gotten better, the ceiling is endless for this guy. I mean, second round, early third round, you get 100 points out of the guy, plus minus. He does everything except get penalty minutes, but you can get that elsewhere.
There needs to be an alert for this, but round three was the round where we started to see the New Jersey Devils resurgence come alive. We had Taylor Hall go at 27, the third pick in the third round. So I just think, recapping this mock draft, it's evident to me, I think we can all agree, New Jersey is a very exciting team this season, and you're probably going to have to reach for some of these guys if you want them on your fantasy team.
Well, PK Subban at number 34 overall. Davey took his new Devils friend. I think that Subban was a top five fantasy defenseman in this mock draft, which is high expectations. I mean, when was the last time that Subban delivered a top five fantasy season? Probably with Montreal.
It's not only Subban, but for me, in the last 20 seasons, the Devils have had two seasons where a defenseman has scored 60 points. Niedermeyer did it once, Rafalski did it the other. So PK Subban, can he get there? Yes, I think he's clearly the number one defenseman there, power play. It's a good situation for him, and I think he'll end up as a top five defenseman when the season ends.
And let's not overshadow the fact that young Jack Hughes can come in and inspire some youth, some young blood into this team. We know the Devils for many seasons were seen as an older, aging, slow team. That brand of hockey has changed drastically under their GM, Ray Sherrow. I'm excited for this team, and I do think PK Subban will be hitting that 6-0 mark this year.
Speaking of teams that are not usually on the fantasy radar that are now, I mean, with this Devils team, we just did our first line rankings, second line rankings, and power play rankings. They were top 15 on the power play with a unit that includes Subban, Hughes, Taylor Hall, if he's healthy. And then their first line and their second line were among the top 10. Not many other teams can say that in the entire league.
You know, I think the last time the Devils had a top number one line was probably 2000 with Eliash, Arnaut, Sikora, which those guys were one of the best lines in the league. And like you said, they have two really good lines here. They'll probably mix and match those top six. But if you're a Devils fan or even fantasy, it's exciting to see these guys because you've never really had much to work with as far as Devils forwards.
Man, you're knee deep in the Devils history there, Davey. So I'm going to swing this one to Tampa Bay, a very high profile team in fantasy. Every single season, we had Steven Stamkos go at 30, which I guess is a little bit low, but if we're scared he's going to be center only, I think it's justifiable. And then Braden Point, five selections after him at 35. Is there a legitimate conversation about if you're taking Point or Stamkos first?
I think it's a toss-up, honestly. I like it more from Kucherov's standpoint. I think that's why we still have him number one overall in our rankings, and he went number one in this mock, is because either way, he's going to be playing with Stamkos or Point, which is an unbelievable security blanket and makes him pretty much a lock for like 110, even if he regresses by, say, 18 points.
Yeah, I wouldn't argue with either of those guys. I think Point led the league in power play points last year, too, which on that team with those other two guys says something, but I don't think you can go wrong with either of those two ahead of the other.
And you also can't go wrong with Tyler Seguin from the Dallas Stars. If that's a player available in round three, he's going to be close to leading the league in shots. He's going to be up there in goals, probably 40-plus. He's got a new addition in Joe Pavelski. He's got a whole plethora of possible line mates for next season. That's a player, again, if available in round three, you've got to be picking his name.
He has one of the five highest floors of any player in the NHL from a fantasy standpoint, Tyler Seguin. It doesn't matter if he's playing with Ben and or Radulov, if he's with Hintz, if he's with Pavelski, he'll be with all of them on the power play. And at even strength, he carries his own line. He does not need to be with Jamie Benn anymore.
And then a quick nod for Elias Pettersson, who went 33rd overall. He was my Calder pick preseason last year, so I need to tip my cap to myself there. But all seriousness, this kid has a super high ceiling. Vancouver, I love the additions they made. Michael Ferland, do not sleep on that player in fantasy, boys. So I think for Elias Pettersson this season with Brock Besser, oh my gosh, please sign me up time and time over and over.
It's high praise for Pettersson, who won the Calder last year. He went in this draft ahead of some heavyweights like Geno Malkin, Nicholas Backstrom, Jack Eichel, who was a point a game.
You know, last year I was watching the last week of the season, the Canucks, when they got to overtime, 3-on-3. They had Brock Besser, Elias Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes out there. Those are three guys.
Baby.
That was amazing 5 minutes or less because I think they actually won.
But don't come off the ice.
Those guys, any of those three guys are exciting, and with the additions the Canucks made, I think those guys are in line for some good fantasy seasons.
That's why I was actually looking back at this mock draft, and like I'm big on Cale Makar, but I actually took Quinn Hughes higher than Cale Makar in this mock draft, and I could kind of realize why looking back at it, just because of the ceiling, and like you said, on the power play, on the 3-on-3, all these different situations. If these guys are all on the ice together, this is a high-end scoring group.
Moving down to the nitty-gritty here, boys, round four, we're kind of scraping already to get some good value. Starting off with the goalie position, John Gibson of the Anaheim Ducks, a team that we seem to be coming back to on every podcast in the offseason. What is going on here?
Well, I reached for him here. He is an elite goalie option on his own. You start to look at this range. Carey Price, I don't trust Montreal. Jordan Binnington, I think, has a chance to regress. We can all agree on that in his second season. And all of a sudden, you look at John Gibson, and I took Pekka Rinne right before him. For that team, I locked up my goalies for the entire draft with Rinne and Gibson, two teams that I think will make the playoffs in the West.
I think Gibson will have a bounce-back season, but I wouldn't have taken him that high in that round alone. Binnington was selected after him, Carey Price, and Braden Holtby. Holtby's the only guy that I may have let slip before him, but Gibson, there's still too many questions there. They have young players. He's going to be great, but is he going to get the wins? It's just tough. I think that's a reach, as you said, for him. I would have taken Price.
Guys, you've heard it from me before. I'm high on the Ducks, quack, 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 over 80.5 points. Completely agree with Davey. Carey Price here, after John Gibson, I think that's a little low for Carey Price, taking a look at the whole landscape. I understand you're down on the Canadians, but I think Carey Price could have a nice little year.
I just see a higher offensive gear for Anaheim. Everything went wrong last year. I think they're going to have more continuity in their top six, and I just don't trust the line combinations for Montreal.
Reality is Carey Price is the reliable Chevrolet in fantasy. He comes to the rink every day ready to play. The car starts when it's minus 16 degrees Celsius out there. That is the player that Claude Julien is going to rely on this season specifically to get that team an eighth seed playoff berth. I'm all over Carey Price early round four.
Does he get them there? I say no.
It's tough with all the other teams got better around them, really, so I don't
know. Boys. Jesperi Kotkaniemi is the truth. That kid can flat-out play. If he gets a little bit more muscle on that frame, he's not only going to be winning faceoffs for them this season, Davey, I know you love that stat, but he's also going to be putting the goals in the net, and that is a player in fantasy if you grab in a late round that you might have boom or bust potential.
I'm keeping my eye on Kotkaniemi. He had mid-30s in points playing in the bottom six, which is impressive for a team that didn't do a lot of scoring. But Montreal was, I think, better point total than three Western Conference playoff teams, even though they missed. So we undervalued them last year, and we probably shouldn't sleep on them too much again this year.
Yeah, they're probably not going to finish top three in that division, and the Panthers could also sneak in there. So I feel like their best bet is eighth. The last wild card is number five in the division, but with the teams that got better in the Metro, I feel like it'd be hard to sneak them in.
So on paper, this looks a little funny, but Patrick Laine selected 41, and then the same positional player, Mark Stone, selected just two picks later. Is there a legitimate debate now which one you'd rather have?
I think that Stone is a better chance at being a point per game player than Patrick Laine. I'll go on the record to say that. Laine might have 45, 50 goals. I think Mark Stone will have more points than him and take it to the bank. And this was the start of a nice little trend that I took Stone, and then I went a little heavy on this Vegas top line. You could also get Shea Theodore. I like that grouping on the power play and even strength, that four-man unit.
I've always liked Patrick Laine, but this year I don't think I'm going to reach for him or even take him that high. He had 18 of his 31 goals last season were in 1 month. So that tells you that for four other months, he only had 12 goals. That, to me, is concerning. The Jets got worse this offseason, so I'm not sure if I want him.
I'm completely in my own corner on this one then, because I would take Patrick Laine in the end of the second round, early third round, if he's available to me. I just can't imagine myself passing on a potential 50-goal player. I could probably name you guys four other players that I can think legitimately could score 50 goals. I'm not passing on Patrick Laine again.
I know you had Laine in a league last year, and you had like a really solid team, and then when he exploded for you, your team was unbeatable. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to keep in mind. If you can get him in the fourth round, third round even, it's really good value, because he is one of the few guys, other than maybe Ovechkin and McDavid, that can really blow it open for you in your week-to-week matchups.
And then just two quick Toronto picks here, boys. We had Tyson Barrie and Morgan Rielly go back-to-back. Morgan Rielly was selected first at 45, Tyson Barrie at 46. I prefer Tyson Barrie as my cup of tea. Are we leaning one way or the other there?
I like Barrie also. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the stats level off with those two guys, but he's the best defenseman there offensively. And I think on the Leafs team, you should see, similar to what he did with Colorado, maybe even a little better. I mean, they have similar kind of players with what Colorado had up front and the Maple Leafs. And I just feel like Barrie is the defenseman. If I had to pick one of the Leafs guys, I want him.
I think when you look at their first power play unit, we have them second in our power play rankings behind the Boston Bruins. But that unit is absolutely absurd with Marner, Matthews, Tavares, and maybe both defensemen. I think there's a really good chance after Kadri's out the door that they go with two defensemen or in some kind of rotation like the Sharks have and utilize both of those in that situation and would make both of them extremely valuable in fantasy.
Kicking off round five, we saw the trigger finger on D-Man. This happens every year in fantasy hockey when there's a number one defenseman taken. You start to panic. You take another number one defenseman. So we kick it off with Seth Jones at the top of round five and then go right into Roman Josi next.
I mean, you're looking at power play quarterbacks here. I mean, John Klingberg at 54 is an absolute bargain, in my opinion. That power play unit has as high of a ceiling as any unit in the league after the addition of Pavelski. And Klingberg's going to be shooting those shots from the point. Pavelski's going to be deflecting them. I expect a big bump in assists for John Klingberg this year.
Yeah, Klingberg is the guy that I mentioned. I would want him there too above some of those other guys. But also in that round, the last pick was Alex DeBrincat. The guy had 40 goals last season. What's his ceiling?
Wait,
I mean,
wait,
if you're taking
wait.
In that low,
wait. You know, no one has mentioned the Subban departure for Roman Josi. Are we asleep at the wheel here?
Contract season for Roman Josi. He's had one of the most cap-friendly contracts in the NHL. He is going to make top dollar after the season he puts forth this year.
This is a 20-goal defenseman that you're potentially taking other guys over. And the reason that I'm not, I love John Klingberg. The reason why I'm not reaching for John Klingberg is Miro Heiskanen. Is anybody paying attention to this guy?
I'm not saying I'll take Chris Letang above him, but I think, or even Jones. I would probably take Klingberg and then Josi. That's just me.
Okay, and then my argument for Seth Jones would be, with all their offensive departures, this guy's in line for probably a 20-goal season as well.
He's not going to be their leading scorer. It's probably going to be Atkinson or Dubois, but he might be close to those guys.
If those guys are
in the 60s, low 60s, he might be right there with them. He's going to take on a heavy workload. He's going to be relied upon for offense, and that's what you dream about for fantasy from a defenseman.
I mean, but the Blue Jackets did lose a lot of guys. Maybe the offense just dries up and he doesn't produce
as much. Well, I guess no one's going to score any goals on their team, and they're just going to mail it in.
Yeah, don't expect them to quit. I think they might be a lottery team, but they might be a little closer to contention than we just think at this moment. But yeah, the Blue Jackets forwards didn't go for a long time after the Seth Jones pick.
What about Davey's question on DeBrincat? It was completely overlooked by Robbie. Robbie is a little spicy today, I'll say that. But can we get back to Davey's point on DeBrincat, please?
To answer your question properly, Davey, I love these picks to end round five. We had Philip Forsberg, left wingo at 58, Yevgeny Kuznetsov, 59, and then Alex DeBrincat at 60. I think that's a very appropriate range for those players. Their upside is well higher than that. We all know that. But those are players, again, you're probably not going to reach for. If you got your Patty Kane early, you're going to want to get your Alex DeBrincat later. That's just the way it goes.
And I don't know about the Blackhawks as a playoff team, but I can tell you they're going to be a top 10 offense and a top 10 power play this season. And they got better goaltending tandem with Leonard and Crawford. So look to stack these Chicago guys, I think. If you miss out on Kane, you could easily get DeBrincat and then get like Erik Gustafsson later or Dylan Strome later. And we mentioned it earlier to answer your question. We said that Kane has a higher ceiling, maybe playing with Strome and DeBrincat. That goes for DeBrincat as well.
I still think that's too low for him. I don't think he's going to go that low, but if he does, good for you, because he's had, what, two straight seasons of 35. You know, he had 40 last year. The Blackhawks offense is going to be better this year. I think he could be a 90-point player.
Well, here we go. There's a 90-point player taken in round six, Jonathan Huberdeau at 64, the fourth pick of the sixth round. So, again, boys, the theme of the draft here seems to be so many deep forwards.
Yeah, and Phil Kessel went in this round as well. He scored 92 points two seasons ago. He doesn't play with Crosby and Malkin anymore, but he has that type of ceiling. So, yeah, Huberdeau, to me, I worry about him if maybe he's separated from Barkov, yeah, because we've seen that in years past. He scored 92 points, which is one of the best seasons in Florida Panthers history when he's with Barkov. But what happens when he's off that line, or if Trocheck gets injured again? That's my only concern with Huberdeau, and that's probably why he fell this far.
Yeah, I think he should probably be higher than Matthew Tkachuk, who was taken right above him there. Mm-hmm. I know he was a point-per-game guy last year, but I just don't know if – and he's up for a new contract, but I just don't know if his offense is at that level again. You know, he'd take penalty minutes, which is good, but I don't know if he's going to get 30 goals, 80 points again this year.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair debate, boys. I just – when I look at this round, there are so many potentially great players. You look at Brock Besser, too, who if he stays healthy, I mean, that could be major upside in Vancouver. There's Torrey Krug. You can get a number one defenseman on a Stanley Cup team right there late in that round, too. So there is just ripe talent all over the board.
At the goaltending position in this round, it got really interesting because I felt the need to reach for either Grubauer or Hart, two guys that are expected to be full-time starters but are relatively unproven at this level over a full season. Both of them are, to be frank.
It's weird to see Connor Hellebuyck be drafted underneath them, right? Two seasons ago, even last season, this guy was probably taken as a top five, and now I don't know what he is here, 10, 11, but behind two guys who might not even be full-time starters. I think Carter Hart has the bigger upside. Grubauer is going to do well as he did last season, but I think if I were going to pick between those two, I like what the Flyers did in the offseason. Carter Hart got his feet wet last year, so I would take him.
Two questions for you, Goalie Master. Is the sophomore slump with goalies real? And then when we look at Philip Grubauer in his case, he no longer has the security blanket of an NHL veteran and Semyon Varlamov there to back him up.
First question, I don't think it's going to affect Carter Hart that much. Second question, Grubauer, you're right, he doesn't have that security blanket, but he still has that great offense in front of him. I mean, if he allows three goals in some games, he can still get the wins. He was great last season. 60 starts for him, I'll take it.
I told you guys this before. I really like the sneaky upside of the Flyers, and don't discount this storyline. Carter Hart is supposed to be the goaltending prodigy in the NHL in the future. He just had to watch Jordan Binnington, a no-name player, go and win the Stanley Cup. You think that that's not going through his mind? I think he was watching the playoffs and looking at that and saying, I'm going to take this league by storm in year number two after playing whatever 30 games as a rookie.
That's a really great point, because no one was talking about Jordan Binnington the beginning of last year, and Carter Hart was expected to be called up way earlier. So I think you're right. That might add some fuel to his fire there.
Pressure. He's got a little pressure on his shoulders, does Carter Hart, and that concerns me a bit.
It's a real thing, but when you look at round seven, we had Sean Couturier, number one center for the Philadelphia Flyers, go second in that round. With an under Alain Vigneault, this is going to be a good offensive team, and if you can get a number one center in round seven, holy moly.
This is why you bring in a guy like Alain Vigneault for the immediate impact. He's gotten two teams to the Cup Final before with Vancouver and the Rangers, and I think that the Flyers have that type of gear in their arsenal. They have one of the deepest offenses. Right, they're right up there with any other team in our top 250 rankings. They got like 11 or 12 players. Only maybe Toronto has that many in
it's
the entire
like
league.
It's almost like he comes in, the team performs well for two or three seasons, and then they go downhill.
And they'll fall off.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
You know
so
what's going to happen.
I feel like this year should be the year in fantasy that you're targeting Philadelphia Flyers. Again, I am not a Flyers homer here. I just know that the AV impact is real, and I think we're going to see it this season.
And we talked about how deep the center position is, but if you can get Couturier in the seventh round like we did here, he is one of the best category coverage guys, I think, in the league.
And what about the great value at pick number 84 for Mika Zibanejad? Whether you get Panarin or not, I mean, this guy is going to score 80-plus points if he's healthy after scoring 74 last year without very much help. I mean, they had a right-wing hole all season, and he was playing with Chris Kreider. What an upgrade. What a massive upgrade that Panarin is over Chris Kreider.
That is the biggest upgrade meme button I've ever seen. We have some good defensemen going in this round, too. We had Mark Giordano going at 75. We had Keith Yandel Sonk at 77. And then we had Eric Gustafson at 79. I mean, and Shea Weber at 83. These are all guys. And Alex Pietrangelo, don't exclude him either. Big-time playoff performer. Those are all guys that are going to make the difference for you in week-to-week categories. Honestly, spin a random wheel, whichever one it lands on, I'm happy drafting.
One big storyline for this entire mock to this point is that six San Jose players were taken among the first 80, including Martin Jones, who went in this round. San Jose is loaded. They have some holes in their top six, but it's the same cast of characters with Carlson, Hurdle, Couture, Burns. I mean, how do you view Martin Jones, goalie master, after a terrible season, an absolutely terrible regular season last year? Does he bounce back?
I don't think he will bounce back, as far as he may have a save percentage over 90, which he didn't this year, but, and, you know, 30 something wins, but he's not a guy that I want to help me in all of the categories. And if you ask him and everyone on the team, he's great. They don't need a backup, blah, blah, blah. But what you saw last year, I think, and in the playoffs for the most part before the second round, is more likely what we'll see out of him going forward.
And the reality with Martin Jones is, I know how bad his numbers were last season. We all know how bad his numbers were last season. First of all, it can't get any worse than it was. And secondly, this is a workhorse goalie. You know that you're getting 60, 65, almost 70 appearances out of a guy. In fantasy hockey, let's call a spade, boys. You need a player like that.
He'll get 35 wins in his sleep if that team stays healthy, even if he's not producing well. But, I mean, Martin Jones, I had him in one of my leagues. I was riding the Sharks goalies, which was mostly him because he was a workhorse. He would get you like a three-game winning streak, and you wouldn't even feel the positive impact. And then that team would go in the tank for 2 weeks, and then you wouldn't have any answers. So it's a really tough predicament for a fantasy owner.
Yeah, that's a great point, because you might be stacking up the wins, but you'd see your save percentage and your go down and your goals against go up with him in there. So that's kind of
just tank. And, literally,
and shutouts wouldn't be shutouts would be non-existent. So you're right about that. That's kind of one of those things where you'd actually question playing him.
So we're talking about Western Conference contenders, and Dallas is near the top of my list, and one of their key cogs, Jamie Benn, at number 85. This is an unbelievable pick. We got some comments about how he was going too low in this mock. Did we underestimate him here? Because the more you think about the line combinations, he's going to be playing with a damn good player either way.
Yeah, I don't know where we had him last year going, but it couldn't have been later than the second round, probably.
He was going in the first round, yeah, last year.
He had his worst offensive season since his rookie year, I think. But in the eighth round, I think that's way too late for him. He's going to have a better year. Look at who they've added around. I mean, this is a of great value pick here. Pete, you and I think, we're on record saying he's our biggest bounce-back player this season, and I don't think there's any reason to think anyone else comes even close to doing what he does this year.
These are the rounds where you start to see sneaky teams being selected. We have a lot of Arizona Coyotes. OEL was at 88. Antti Raanta was at 90. Good value for each of those players. And then we have an Ottawa Senator off the board at 89 with Thomas Chabot. Big-time offensive upside as a defenseman. That's got to be a player, even though the team concern is there, that you would select this round or maybe even a little earlier.
And interesting to see two Minnesota Wild guys go. I mean, nobody's really too high on that team. But Matthew Dumba, before his injury, was an elite fantasy defenseman, goal-scoring, category coverage. And Devan Dubnyk is a guy that will probably start 60-plus games every single season for this team.
Yeah, two Wild taken. None of them were a forward. I mean, how late do we have to go here before we see the Wild's first forward taken off the board?
Don't hold your
here?
Breath, Davey.
It barely even happened. It was Zuccarello, I think, in like the last round or second to last round. So, not a good forward outlook for a team that just fired its GM after one season. They're at a bit of a crisis, and they're going to have to get points from the back end out and play strong defensively.
We have a little center bonanza here going to Matt Duchene, who signed with Nashville, is 91. And then rookie alert, Davey, get your jersey ready. Jack Hughes at number 94, inside the top 100, the first rookie from the 2019 class off the board.
Yeah, he was taking three or four picks ahead of Kaapo Kakko, the second rookie taken, number 2 overall. I think Hughes, We've discussed it already, and you guys have discussed it. He's got great upside. There's no reason to think he can't get 60, 65 points in his rookie season. And a top 100 might be somewhere where he is good to have him now. I think when the season progresses, he'll be a top 50 guy.
I think you're chatting with Cam Robinson behind our backs a little bit. I mean, he was on the 65-point bandwagon for Jack Hughes. I think that's a little high. I mean, I would rather get Nico Hischier in, like, the 14th round and take my chances with him. You know he's going to play with either Gusev or Taylor Hall. It's just a little high to take Jack Hughes, in my opinion. That's just how I feel.
All I can tell you about how to take Jack Hughes or Kaapo Kakko first: if you're in a fantasy league with a Rangers fan, Kakko's going first. If you're in a fantasy league with a Devils fan, Jack Hughes is going first. I mean, otherwise you're just going to be reaching for these guys. It's going to be hard to get them. Just like Rasmus Dahlin last year, we saw the same thing.
I'll pounce on whichever one of the big three falls, whether it's Cale Makar to like the 10th round, or, you know, if Hughes or Kaapo Kakko falls outside the top 100. I will, though, make sure I get one of those three guys on my team.
One last question for Goalie Master about the top 100. We had Henk Lundqvist selected at 99 with, I guess, the appeal or hope that he's going to bounce back. Is that crazy?
I mean, I don't know how well he'll bounce back, but it has to be better than last year, right, guys? I mean, it's got... the defense is improved. There's better offense. I mean, I think he could have 25 wins maybe, but they have a goalie of the future that they want here, and Lundqvist may see his starts limited again. So
I think he's going to be re-energized, just having so much talent around him, youth around him. This was a guy, they were in a rebuild. I mean, you didn't know if he was ever going to be competitive again from a team standpoint. You can bet that they're going to be a much improved team, and I think it's going to re-energize the king of New York and maybe gets them back to the playoffs.
I mean, he's 37 years old. He turns 38 this year, so that's also a factor. I don't know.
Numbers declining for three straight years, too. The factor, but another factor, Semyon Varlamov, the X factor, hopefully for the New York Islanders this season, or Barry Trotz is hoping at least, selected at 105, and then Robin Lehner was selected. It is the third pick in round 10, so you're going to start to see this in fantasy hockey. People that waited too long on goalies are going to be snatching these guys up like flies.
Grice and Lehner were the two-man wrecking crew last year, but I actually took Varlamov ahead of both of those guys in this mock, and I think most people will probably do the same. For me, goalies, I want to know that the guy's going to have a workload, and I think that Varlamov has a much better chance at that compared to tandems on either side. I mean, I think Chicago's situation is really murky in the crease.
Yeah, I think Lehner will have decent numbers. You know, it's hard to do what he did last year, but if you can get that guy in around 10, especially with Crawford's injury history, he could be the starter for them. So that's not necessarily a bad pick right there.
And I have to just say, this is a criminal offense here. Sean Monahan going at 112. I can't even wrap my head around that. I have nothing to say about that pick. And then 113, Shane Gostisbehere. We're getting into serious bounce back territory here. So this is just to give you guys reference. This is around the 110 range. 110 to 130 is players that had down years, real down years. I'm scooping these guys up in this range.
This is where fantasy hockey is different and deeper than I think any other fantasy sport. You see point per game players going in the 10th round of a draft, like Jonathan Toews. I know his line mates are uncertain, but he had 81 points. Monahan had 82. You can get, I mean, point per game in fantasy hockey is not the cream of the crop like it used to be. I mean, everybody's doing it.
Yeah, Jonathan Toews, there was some outcry this week because NHL Network didn't have him listed in their top 20 centers, and people were saying, how can that be? You know, he had a great season last year, but players don't usually have their best offensive seasons when they're 31 or older like he is, but you can see 70, 75 points from him, getting him that late, as we said. You know, you mentioned how times are changing now, and I think that's in a really appropriate spot for him to be. For him to be going.
And I just want to point out to the listeners that Tom Wilson, your favorite player in the NHL, Dave, was selected at 110 overall. That's ahead of Jonathan Toews, ahead of Sean Monahan, ahead of guys like Evgeny Dadonov, Jake Voracek, even William Nylander in round 11, who's my top bounce back performer candidate for the season.
I snagged Nylander here, and I'm proud to say it, especially after your recent tweets and everything convincing people out there about Nylander's bounce back status. So that's a great pick there. Also, Tom Wilson. People forget. I mean, Nicholas Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov swap off that line constantly. Alex Ovechkin's most frequent line mate is Tom Wilson.
That's right. That's
Big
right.
Tommy, Free Willy. So I think that Tom Wilson is a great pick in the 10th round or later in fantasy, covering hits.
And the guy who was taken in the last round there is Trouba on the Rangers. I don't know how this guy was taken that low. I think his points could be off the charts this year. That could be a steal right there.
No, Davey, I'm you know why? Adam Fox. The fox, think about the animal in the wild. It moves in stealth. You don't hear about these things coming. Same thing with Adam Fox. You're not going to hear about this guy until the second week of the regular season when he pots two goals, he's quarterbacking the power play, setting up one-timers for Kakko and Zibanejad.
If he's power play one on opening night, it could certainly happen.
I like this kid, but I don't think he's going to come out of the shoot and be as, you know, as great as you say.
As described. Stealthy. Okay, so we're going from criminal offense with Sean Monahan to felony offense here. 133, Dylan Larkin. What, please explain the rationale to me why Dylan Larkin, who had a breakout year and looks like he has limitless trajectory, is going in round 12.
I think the reason is because he plays on the Detroit Red Wings.
Team concerns. When the centers are going in the 90s, like Matt Duchene, Jack Hughes, high upside players are going in the 90s, Zibanejad's going in the 80s. Like we said, 2 point per game players going in the 10th round. I think that's why. The bigger names speak for themselves. They have safer teams on their side, safer line mates. That said, Larkin really heated up down the stretch with Anthony Mantha. Anthony Mantha had like 15 points in his last 7 or 8 games. Don't sleep on that team or that line.
And looking at the goalies, we're kind of scraping the bottom of the barrel here. Mackenzie Blackwood was chosen 15 or 16 picks before Corey Schneider, and also ahead of Peter Mrazek, who could be the starter and will be the starter in Carolina. We saw Blackwood last year. I don't know if he'll probably get the same amount of playing time. I don't know if it'll be a 50-50 split with Schneider, but Blackwood isn't a guy that I want, personally, even in this round. There's other guys, wow. Mrazek, other guys that are better than him.
David Rittich come to mind, Davey, on the Calgary Flames?
Yeah, he does come to mind. So does Jonathan Quick,
well,
for me personally.
You could have had Rittich one full round later, round 13. And if my math is correct, I think that Cam Talbot might be over the hill here. So for terms of backup, I think David Rittich doesn't really have one. I think they're leaning on this guy to play 50, 55, 60 games.
That's an interesting situation. I'm looking at this round, this region of goalie picks at the Metro Division. Do you think Carolina is going to regress? Do you think the Islanders are going to regress? Do you think these most improved teams between the Devils and the Rangers are going to jump those teams? I think that they'll jump the Islanders. I don't know if they'll jump the Hurricanes, and that's why Peter Mrazek, for the second straight year, is a really nice goalie sleeper. And contrary to last year, you know he's going to start 50-plus games, which you couldn't say last year.
As you said, they might not make the playoffs, but he's going to be the guy. And he was chosen below Thomas Greiss. Personally, I would have taken this guy's a number one starter. Why would you take him before a backup?
I don't understand, Davey. Round 14, big selection, Nazem Kadri, another bounce-back candidate. This one, I don't even think you can call it that because he is a lock to return to 30-goal form in the Colorado Avalanche top six.
He's the best player taken in this round, I think, by far and away. You look at upside, you look at shots in the dark with certain players, but I mean, I also like Svechnikov in this round. I think he's a breakout candidate, so that's really my takeaways here. I think this is where you start to hit the range, where you start to fill positional needs, and you know, some players that were drafted later than this might be better than this round, but this is where you start to take the guys that have been falling, like Braden Schenn, JVR, and you move forward to round out your lineup.
I agree with Petey here on Svechnikov. I mean, total breakout player. You get him at 166. I think he has a big year for Carolina, scores some goals, does his thing. Svechnikov on my radar, boys.
And that is a DFS player's dream right there, too. What about at 167? I see Mikko Koskinen off the board. If Edmonton is a playoff team this year under Dave Tippett, don't you think Mikko Koskinen could return some serious value?
I do. I know Pete is on the train with Mike Smith and the coach have their thing, and 7 seasons ago was great for Mike Smith, but Koskinen played well. They rewarded him with the contract, whatever it was, 3 years, so that he can be the starter when they got rid of Talbot. So I do like Koskinen.
I do like Mike Smith a little bit more because of the familiarity, but I look at Mikko Koskinen, what he did shutouts-wise in an absolute train wreck of a season. He had 4. That's higher than middle of the pack among starting goalies. So that's a really nice total for a timeshare guy. I don't even remember who he played with last season, to be honest.
Gonna bust Davey Boy's chops here a little bit. Davey, the goalie master, do you have any criticism for any goaltenders? You can't love every guy. I mean, you love Koskinen, you love Bennington, you love them all. You love Hank. I mean, a little criticism here?
All right. I think Varlamov is troubling with the Islanders personally. I know they have the defense, the goalie coach, yada, 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 but I don't think he has as great a season as everyone thinks he does. And staying in the Metro Division, we didn't talk about this guy, but I'm not that sold on Matt Murray. I just don't think that the numbers are going to be great. He's got the injury history. They lost Kessel. I don't know. I don't like Matt Murray. I'm
and
on record.
They
there
have
go.
15 primetime games this year, Davey. I think we're all going to be able, whether you have the premium package or not, to witness the decline of the Pittsburgh Penguins.
I look at Matt Murray's save percentage, though. I mean, we're all talking about bounce. We're talking with Mike Kelly, with the group, about a bounce-back season for Matt Murray. Didn't he have, like, a .919 save percentage? That's better than Gibson in a down year for his team. I think that Matt Murray still has a very nice gear to reach. And with that 35 goal, maybe .920-plus save percentage, it's coming soon, even though Pittsburgh has some issues.
I don't know. I think with their defensive core, that would be a player I am just not interested in this season. Count me out on the Matt Murray sweepstakes.
Fair enough.
And just to ping pong a couple names here in rounds 15 and 16, worth drafting, we have Rupe Hintz here at 172 for the Dallas Stars. You're looking at a full-time top six role for him, potentially even power play one, depending on the injury situation there. So that's a team that I would be targeting their kind of lower-end guys in this range.
I really like Hintz, and I really like Galchenyuk. There are two guys that are on our sleepers list on NHL.com/fantasy. Hintz is guaranteed to play with either Radulov, Ben, Sagan, or Pavelski. Absolutely guaranteed, which I love.
Yeah, Hintz is great. You know, last year I was kind of on his bandwagon because I talked to their development coach for a Stars story I did, and I didn't think he was going to come up last year, but we saw how well he did. The other guy in that range that I think is a great sleeper, Tyler Myers on the Canucks. One of the first guys that they signed. We talked about the offensive guys the Canucks have. If he's out there dishing passes to Pettersson, Besser, Hughes on the power play, I mean, this guy's in for a great season.
And a lot of people were on Twitter criticizing that signing for Vancouver. I wasn't really seeing that either. He's a big right shot player. He can score goals. He could take on a new role with Vancouver, be re-energized there. One other player on my list I'm keeping an eye on in this range, Andre Kasha, swinging it back here to the Anaheim Ducks. Boy, we've missed talking about them since 5 minutes ago. But Andre Kasha is a potential 30-goal scorer. If he stays healthy, he's going to be on the first or second line, and he's going to be their new trigger man on power play one.
I want to see Andre Kasha on the top line under Dallas Eakins. I don't want to see Silverberg there. I mean, Corey Perry's out the door. It's a new era. If he's healthy, he's got to be playing on the top line with Ryan Getzlaf and Max Comtois if I'm the head coach of the Anaheim Ducks.
And how about this guy who's a sleeper? Elvis Merzlikins.
Merzlikins.
It's been a while. I mean, he's a starter for their team, and he's drafted before after some tandem guys, and he almost didn't even get drafted. So there's a guy that, let's be real.
Merzlikins.
Okay, Robbie. Robbie, the Blue Jackets are going to win some games, and Elvis M is probably going to have some W's.
Now, we had the final three picks of this mock draft be Columbus Blue Jackets players, so we're clearly taking a stab. Each one of us took one. I mean, I took Merzlikins because of his upside. I think he's has a higher ceiling than Jonas Korpisalo, defensive system of John Tortorella. I would take a stab at that, an investment in the final pick of my draft.
Hey, we had Cam Robinson on yesterday, and he liked Corey Schneider over Mackenzie Blackwood. Before we put a bow on this one, Davey Satriano, what are your thoughts on Corey Schneider having a big year, getting the workload, and Blackwood not performing up to snuff?
I think Schneider will be the starter, 50 games for him, 32 for Blackwood. Schneider has something to prove. He still has the long contract, but I think this is the year for him. He's got the team in front of him. He stays healthy. Blackwood's the guy of the future for them. Schneider this year is going to be, I don't know if he can get 30 wins, but he may be able to. But I think Schneider this year will have a good year, and he'll be the starter for the Devils team.
I like that take. And now I've heard two people in the last week say that. I think by the next time we do another mock draft, I think just naturally we're going to see Corey Schneider going higher than Mackenzie Blackwood.
I think I've seen enough of Corey Schneider, to be honest. I mean, can this guy put together over the past 3-4 seasons a month of good play? I mean, end of last year, it was like, what, 10 games? He finished the season strong. I need to see more. I would lean more toward the untapped potential of Blackwood, because we also saw a short span where he had multiple shutouts. He went like 5-2 in his first 7 games. That's where I would lean towards the upside in the late rounds.
I think the three of us combined had the same amount of wins as Corey Schneider in the 2018 calendar year, which was 0. So I see your reason for concern there, but I think the team in front of him is better, and I like his upside this year.
we were underutilized. We should have gotten more playing time. We didn't even get a chance to outdo Corey Schneider. But, yeah, two other – I mean, one key theme before we wrap the show up is the defensemen really went heavily in the later rounds. We saw good forwards go undrafted. I know we got a fan question saying, why did Anders Lee go undrafted? There were other big names. Krejci was a 70-plus point guy, went undrafted. Bo Horvat, Ryan Getzlaff, Nick Schmaltz all went undrafted in favor of some of these defensemen with upside, like Sam Girard I took, Devon Taves I took, who could be power play one for the Islanders, or he was in the playoffs.
Well, just think about this. When you're drafting a team, you've got to draft positional players. Think about the waiver wire in the first 2 weeks of the season. You're not going to get a defenseman. Very rarely you will get a goalie. You're going to get a forward. You can get a forward any single day you check the waiver wire.
And you can also look off the waiver wire for the guy who that week is playing with Connor McDavid, if it's Zach Cassian, or that guy that week that's playing with Crosby on the right side, Aston Reese, for example, or Cahoon. I mean, you can fill in the gaps with that. You will dry up if you don't have a good bench defenseman, and these are the type of guys that you do to fill out your roster.
I mean, look at the guys who were taken last year, Travis Sanheim, Cam Fowler. Like, those are guys who can be number one defensemen on their team, and they might not even be taken till this late. So I agree with you guys. Defensemen, goalies are the key positions.
So that will do it, boys, for Mock Draft 1.0. Pay attention. We'll also have Mock Draft 2.0 and 3.0 to get you guys primed for your fantasy hockey drafts.
And check out our other episodes of NHL Fantasy on Ice. Thanks again for Davey to join us here for the mock draft. We also have Bounce Backs with Mike Kelly from TSN NHL Network and The Point Hockey. We also have Coaching Changes with our good friend Dan Rosen. Check that one out. It was really good stuff. And Rookies with Cam Robinson from Dauber Hockey. So for Dave Satriano, Rob Reese, Pete Jensen saying so long. We'll talk to you again soon here on NHL Fantasy on Ice.